The court will now hear oral argument in U.S. v. Pierce. And counsel for appellant, would you care to proceed?
May it please the court. I am Captain Krista McGrory, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Potter, we represent the appellant, Specialist Philip Pierce. In this case, the military judge erred when she failed to instruct the panel they must find appellant's conduct was prejudicial to good order and discipline or of a nature to bring discredit upon the armed forces for the specification of charge 2. And contrary to the Army Court's finding, this error was not harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. The terminal elements, if charged, are essential elements of the offense, and the panel must be instructed on them under Article 51, Charlie. The government...
Counsel, what do you think the government's trying to do here? Is this a belt and suspenders thing? You know, we have prong 3 hanging in there, then we have prong 1 and 2 hanging there. They're all conflated in the same spec. What's going on here?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe the government was trying to charge in the alternative, hoping that if they couldn't establish the clause...
That something would stick?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. If 3 didn't stick, 1 or 2 would stick?
I believe so, yes, Your
Honor. Okay. And did anything stick?
No, Your Honor. Nothing stuck.
Okay. Tell me why nothing stuck.
Addressing first the granted issue with Clause 1 and Clause 2, the government does concede that the military judge erred in omitting those specific elements.
Counsel, with respect to Clause 1 and Clause 2, if we disagree with the CCA that that charging that the Internet was sufficient to allege the jurisdictional element for 2422, does it matter whether the military judge instructed on Clauses 1 or Clause 2 as long as we found the instruction with respect to Clause 3 to be sufficient?
It would not matter, no, Your Honor, because it would be meeting the Clause 3 prong of the specification. However,
so why don't you explain why the military judge got it wrong and the CCA got it right?
As far as Clause 3, Your Honor?
Yes, as to why Internet is not a means of interstate commerce as a matter of law.
It is not a means or a facility of interstate commerce, Your Honor, and the military judge erred in omitting that instruction because under Article 51, the military judge has a duty to instruct the panel on every element of the offense. And additionally, a military accused has both a constitutional and a statutory right to have his guilt established to every element by the panel. And when the offense is charged under Clause 3, obviously, every element of the federal statute applies. And in this case, under 2422, Bravo, that element is means or facility of interstate commerce. It makes no mention of Internet.
But why doesn't that necessarily include or necessarily imply interstate commerce? And isn't that what other federal courts looking at this exact same issue have held?
Yes, Your Honor. First, this court has not held, looking to the plain language of the statute, as I said, it does not include Internet. It specifically says means or facility of interstate commerce. And when you look to a majority of the cases that were cited by the government, those are specifically cited under 2251 and 2252 alpha, which expressly includes by computer. The plain language of the statute in this case does not include by computer. This court has not held as a matter of law that the Internet is a means or facility of interstate commerce. The government has cited United States v. Murray, but that's distinguishable from this case, again, because it's addressing 2252 alpha. An expert actually testified in that case as to what the Internet is, and it specifically said under the circumstances of that case, Internet was sufficient to meet it.
What about the fact that in this case you had the motion about whether the element had to be pled, and the judge concluded that it had been pled, and therefore in this case the appellant was on notice that in this case the Internet was being used interchangeably with interstate commerce?
Yes, Your Honor, I think that goes straight to the first analysis under Nieder, the first prong. And just by having that motion, the defense argued that it did fail to state an offense, and that it is a correct analysis, and that it does not include the element of the statute. The judge made her own finding, thus prohibiting the defense counsel from contesting that element at trial.
Well, no, not necessarily. If the judge says the internet, maybe I don't understand your argument, but if the judge says, correctly or incorrectly, the internet is interstate commerce for the purpose of the pleading, can't the appellant still argue that this didn't occur in interstate commerce, or the internet is not, there's no interstate piece to it, as a matter of fact?
I believe, Your Honor, in this case, he wasn't given that opportunity because the judge had made her, she invaded the province of the panel when she predetermined that the internet was a means or facility.
Wait a minute. How is it within the province of the members to make a legal definition as to what's an instrumentality of commerce? Isn't that a question of law?
Your Honor, I do not believe it's a question of law or a matter of law at this point. It is a matter of fact, because it is an element of the offense that needs to be presented to the panel. I mean, if you look to U.S. v. Godin, in that case it specifically says that even questions that involve both law and fact, if it's an element, it needs to be presented to the panel. And in this case, the specific element that needed to be presented to the panel was means or facility of interstate commerce.
Are you suggesting that the internet is not an instrumentality of interstate commerce?
No, Your Honor. I am not suggesting it.
And you don't disagree that numerous numbered circuits have so held?
They have held that it is legally sufficient. I do not believe they've held as a matter of law that it's a means or facility of interstate commerce.
What if it said United States mail? Would you be up here making the same argument that it failed to state an offense?
Mail specifically is mentioned within the statute, Your Honor, so no, I would not be making the same argument. The argument that appellant is making in this case is that Congress has not specifically set forth that the computer is a means or the internet is a means or facility of interstate.
Is the point you're making that as a matter of statutory drafting, Congress saw fit to not include internet in 2252B and included it explicitly in other sections of the statute?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And what are those other sections?
In the cases cited by the government, Your Honor, 2252 alpha,
2252 A, explicitly includes the interstate internet
by computer. Yes, Your Honor.
By computer. Yeah. Words amounting to the internet.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. But in drafting the statute, Congress didn't put that in B.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And thus, that specific element needed to go to the panel, and it was for the panel to decide whether or not the internet, one, that he used the internet, and two, that it was a means or facility of interstate commerce.
You would agree that the means or facility of interstate commerce, right, is what gives Congress the authority to create this federal statute?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right? And you're not disagreeing that the interstate is, in fact, that the internet is, in fact, a means or facility of interstate commerce, are you?
I am not making that argument in this case.
And so, therefore, doesn't what was actually alleged meet the jurisdictional requirement and isn't therefore necessarily implied in the specification?
Not in this case, Your Honor. I'm not making the argument that the internet isn't a means or facility of interstate commerce. I am making the argument that the element means or facility of interstate commerce does not expressly include internet. Therefore, it was the responsibility of the government to prove that the internet was in fact a means or facility of interstate commerce, which they did not do in this case. They did not put on any evidence as far as whether or not the internet qualified as a means or facility of interstate commerce, being something more than just communication, but meeting the definitions as set forth in Lopez, having to deal with an economic or having to do with a business entity.
I mean, there's so many federal cases where they explicitly say that the internet is a means or facility of interstate commerce. I don't understand your argument.
Yes, Your Honor. Again, I do not believe that federal circuits have held as a matter of law that the internet is a means or facility because they are still instructing on the specific element of the offense. Every case, and the government only cites four when it comes to 2422, they've said two-thirds of their cases are dealing with 2252 alpha and 2251. They cite four cases dealing with 2422 Bravo, one of the cases being a Providence inquiry, and the other three are based on Hornaday out of the 11th Circuit. They still, even though they're holding the internet as legally sufficient for a means or facility of interstate commerce, are instructing on the element, thus showing they're not holding as a matter of law that the internet is a means or facility.
Do I understand you to be arguing that what the error in this, in that section of this case, is that the members were not only required to decide as a matter of fact that the person used the internet and or interstate commerce, but that the members were also supposed to determine that the internet amounted to interstate commerce?
Yes, Your Honor. And if you look to U.S. v. Godin...
So they defined two things.
Yes, Your Honor. And if you look to U.S. v. Godin, the government in that case made the same argument the government in this case is making, that the first question is a matter of law for the military judge, the second question being the predicate facts for the panel. The Supreme Court came back and said that initial question was just a subsidiary question to the ultimate question, both having to be determined by the panel, because every element needs to be presented to the panel, and that did not occur in this case.
Back to the statutory point earlier. Is there anything in the legislative history of the statute, report language, debates in the congressional record, anything like that, that would evince an intent on the part of Congress to treat the constitutional hook of commerce differently in B from other sections of the statute?
I'm not sure, Your Honor, if there's anything going to treating it differently.
Well, in other words, because they put computer in other sections and they didn't put it here, is there anything in the legislative history, debates, report language, anything attaching meaning to that, saying, we did this, we know we did this, and we did it intentionally because, da 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 da.
No, Your Honor, not specifically going to, we didn't put it in there because 2422 was enacted under the Telecommunications Act, along with many of the other statutes involving computer crimes, such as 2252 and 2251, where they explicitly included computer. Therefore, the fact they didn't include computer in this case shows they intended to have the government prove up this jurisdiction.
Well, I'm not sure what it shows, and I'm not sure that it necessarily shows that. But, you know, I'm asking if whether there's any explicit significance, and you're saying no.
No.
So when the statute says whoever using the mail or any facility or means of interstate or foreign commerce, right, and then goes on, why by signifying and defining in the specification a means of interstate or foreign commerce, isn't that sufficient?
No, Your Honor, because it could be any means or facility of interstate commerce.
And so they identified the one that had been used in this case. They're not suggesting that the specification needs to read if you did using the mail or some facility or means of interstate or foreign commerce, are you?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's what you think the specification should read. Do you think that would give them better notice than specifying a particular means?
That is the element of the offense, Your Honor. That is the element that needs to be presented to the panel and proven by the government.
Counsel, perhaps this has gotten a little off by the nature of the assigned issue. The assigned issue focuses on the instructions given by the judge. It seems to me that your argument here is focused primarily alleging an error on the judge with respect to the initial defense motion to dismiss the charge based upon a failure to state an offense. That is, that motion was predicated on an argument that the element would have to require proof not only that the internet was used, but that the internet is a form of interstate commerce as applied in this case.
Yes, Your Honor. And by making her own finding in the instructions, the military judge erred when she omitted the actual element of the offense in her instructions to the panel, and that's exacerbated by the fact that the element is not included in the charge sheet, nor was it included in the instructions that went back to the panel.
Is there any decision by an Article III court or any state court in which the decision as to the internet being a form of interstate commerce is based upon a judicial decision that it's a form of interstate commerce as a matter of law, as opposed to it's a form of interstate commerce as demonstrated by the facts in a particular case?
Your Honor, I see I'm running out of time.
You can answer the question.
Thank you, Your Honor. I am unaware of a case, Your Honor, that has specifically held as a matter of law the internet is a means or facility of interstate commerce. Cases dealing with the issue have addressed it in a legal sufficiency aspect, not coming out and saying as a matter of law it is a means or facility of interstate commerce.
Thank you.
I'll save the remainder of my time for rebuttal, Your Honor, subject to the court's questions.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chief Judge Baker, members of the court. May it please the court. My name is Captain Frank Kostick, and along with Major John White, we represent the United States in this matter. The Army Court erred as a matter of law when it held that the military judge's use of the word internet rather than any facility or means of interstate commerce was error.
Counsel, I want to ask you the same thing I asked counsel for the appellant. What's going on here? What is the government trying to do with this hybrid mess of a specification? Is this a belt and suspenders thing? Are you trying to have it both ways? Is it prong 3 and 1 and 2? Is it either or? Is it nothing? What is it?
Your Honor, this is clearly an attempt of the government to charge an alternate theories of prosecution in one specification.
Then shouldn't it have been severed?
In what sense, Your Honor?
1 and 2, 3.
That is one way that it could have been done. However, my understanding of this court's case precedent is that it can all be charged in one specification, and that if one particular clause is severed at the appellate level, the court can approve, if particularly the CCA can approve.
Now, I'm talking about severing at a trial so we don't get into this kind of mess.
Your Honor, the government agrees that that is just one way that we could have done it and might have avoided the appellate question.
But you're agreeing with me that it's an attempt to have it both ways.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Did the defense make a motion to sever a trial?
No, they did not, Your Honor.
Is the military judge required on his or her own motion to sever charges in that situation?
No.
And is the failure to sever charges an issue on this appeal?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
What was the meaning of the judge's ruling that stated, as drafted in this case, the specification of charge 2 alleges an offense under Article 134, Clause 3?
Yes, Your Honor. The military judge actually specified that issue. In essence, she said, hey, counsel, tell me why this alleges in a specification. It appears that this missing the words, any means or facility of interstate commerce. And her ruling amounts to a ruling that says, no, internet necessarily implies that element. In essence, the defense at that point is on notice that the word internet in that specification is the equivalent of any means or facility of interstate commerce.
And is that all that means? Does that not also imply that this is a Clause 3 specification and not a Clause 1 and 2 specification?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
So at that point, is it the government's view that at that point in the trial this thing was proceeding as a Clause 3 case? Period.
Not period, Your Honor. The specification as alleged on the charge sheet includes both the Clause 1, 2, and 3 language. So when the military judge made that ruling, she in the government's view, made it very clear that the government was proceeding on three alternate theories, not merely one theory.
Very clear. Where is that shown in, excuse me, Judge.
So it alleges an offense under Article 134, Clause 3, and you read in the words, in addition to Clauses 1 and 2, but the judge chose not to add those words.
In her instruction, that is correct, Your Honor. She did not add the clause.
Or in the ruling.
But in the specification, or in the specified issue that the military judge had, that didn't address the Clause 1 and Clause 2 issues, did it?
It did not.
It just addressed the Clause 3.
That's correct.
Did either party argue Clauses 1 and 2 in the closing statement?
Yes, Your Honor. The defense makes some reference to services crediting, the services crediting element of the offense by saying, well, that's a tough one. And then on the government's rebuttal case, they identified specific facts on why it was service discredited.
So is it the government's view that all three clauses were at issue throughout the trial? The judge did not instruct on 1 and 2, and that error is harmless?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's harmless when the judge does not instruct on an explicit element of the offense?
Well, there are two harmless analyses in this case, one with regard to Clause 3.
No, I'm talking about 1 and 2.
Roger. Yes, Your Honor. The Clause 1 and 2 offense, if the military judge did not instruct on those offenses, this court can determine it was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt applying the Netter test. One, whether there was overwhelming evidence presented at trial, and two, whether or not the defense counsel specifically contested those elements. And Netter goes a little further and requires actually that some evidence be presented to overcome.
Counsel, you don't disagree. You don't disagree, do you, that your better argument is that the CCA reached the right result, but for the wrong reason because of the sufficiency of internet for the interstate commerce or means of facility or means of interstate commerce element?
Yes, Your Honor. So if I understand your question correctly,
which is, I guess the bottom line is you don't disagree that your Nader analysis is much weaker than your argument with respect to the Clause 3.
With respect to Clause 3, that's correct. The government's strongest position is, first, that the internet is a facility of interstate commerce as a matter of law, and second, if this court finds that it's not, that's harmless beyond a reasonable doubt in light of how the numerous federal circuits have viewed that particular issue as they have arisen with the various statutes, the child porn statute and the enticement statute.
Well, how do we know what decision was made by the members in this case? Let's assume that the Clause 3 offense is valid, and let's assume that Clauses 1 and 2 are not harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, not harmless under Nader. How do we confirm a conviction under those circumstances? That is, how do we know that the members made that decision in that case?
If I understand the court's question, it's with regard to, I guess I don't understand the court's question.
Yeah. There's three. The court may not understand the question either. There's three aspects. One was charged, the instructed upon, the internet. The other two were not instructed upon. And the government's theory and the CCA's theory is that you can affirm because you're confident that the members made their decision based upon the internet because they returned a finding on that. How do we know, given the interrelationship of the three clauses and the way that the case is argued, how do we know that the failure to instruct on the other two didn't prejudice Clause 3?
I guess I would best start to answer the court's question by it doesn't matter what we think the panel decided. They gave a general verdict in this particular case. So we need not get into the weeds on whether they convicted on Clause 3 or Clause 1 or Clause 2. They didn't accept any language from the specification, so under the general verdicts principle, they would have theoretically convicted on all three. And so if any one of those convictions were, say, found legally or factually insufficient by the CCA, they could have accepted that language from the specification and approved on one of the other two theories.
So you don't see any migration from 1 and 2 into 3? Okay, let's assume that's the case. Now, let's assume that 3 is invalid. That is, and I guess you can see that, that is that the failure to have the members make a finding as to whether there was interstate commerce in this particular case invalidates that conviction. So now you've got 1 and 2. 1 and 2 are not instructed upon. In Nieder, we had a situation in which the once the judge made the decision in Nieder about the materiality issue, that decision was made after the presentation of evidence, and no evidence was presented on that matter, and the Supreme Court said in that case, hey, this is just not an issue in this case. Here, as noted in your earlier argument about what the presentation was made, there was some reference by the defense to evidence on the issue of service discrediting in this case. So in that context, how would you affirm a conviction under Nieder when the presentation of evidence preceded the judge's determination as opposed to Nieder, where the judge made a determination after finding that there was no evidence in the case?
If the question from the court is that, in light of an argument from the defense, how could it ever be harmless? How would we know what the panel was thinking? I would say that...
Well, I think the defense is not simply an argument here. It's an argument as to the lack of evidence. That is, the defense was pointing to the record in the case and arguing that the government hadn't presented evidence on that particular point, the service discrediting. So it wasn't simply that they were making a legal argument for the members to consider. They were talking about the record in the case.
Right. And I believe that, and the government's position is that Nieder requires more than just that commentary on the evidence. Nieder requires that the defense put forth some evidence to sort of overcome that overwhelming nature of the evidence with regard to, in this case, service discrediting conduct. And in this particular case, there truly was overwhelming evidence of service discrediting conduct.
What case stands for the proposition that defense in a criminal trial is required to put on evidence as opposed to point to the evidence in the case and the failure of the government to demonstrate its burden?
The government's drawing a distinction. We're not saying that the defense ever has a burden at trial to put on some evidence, but in order to receive the benefit of the Nieder test or the Nieder test, they absolutely have to put forth something. Otherwise, merely saying not guilty at the beginning of trial would be, I'm contesting all the elements, not guilty. And therefore, the government could never prevail under Nieder. So Nieder must stand for something more than merely just saying, I contest the element. It must stand for the principle that you must contest the element and put forth some evidence in which the panel could logically come to the conclusion that...
Well, is there a requirement that they put on any evidence at all? Can't they just plead not guilty and say that the government hasn't proved its case?
Absolutely.
I mean, you're saying that they're under a requirement to put on evidence.
In order to receive the benefit of the Nieder test. So, Nieder is...
Isn't Nieder a benefit to the government, not a benefit to the accused? In other words, Nieder is dealing with a situation in which the government's going to lose. And the government is saved in that case by the proposition that there was no evidence presented in the case by anyone on that particular matter. It's not a case, I don't understand, perhaps I misunderstood Nieder. I didn't understand Nieder to be a case in which the defense was gaining any benefit. Rather, it's a detriment. It's a case that's a detriment to the defense.
The government would agree that Nieder certainly operated as a detriment to the defense. However, the legal principle that Nieder stands for is, And again, it's that distinction. The government is not implying that in any way the defense needs to put some evidence on at trial. But on appeal, in order to receive the benefit of Netter, to say something is harmless, the court, when looking at the record, has to be able to say, well, we have this overwhelming evidence on behalf of the government. What did the defense put forward to overcome that overwhelming evidence? And the government's position here is mere argument is not enough to overcome overwhelming evidence.
You're talking about whether they contest or not, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what did the defendant contest or not contest with respect to the first element in the jurisdictional element in your view?
With regard to the jurisdictional element in a facility of interstate commerce, the defense did not object. And to the extent that, to address the defense's argument, in essence, that they were precluded from contesting the element, it's just simply not the case. In their motion, or their response motion to the military judge's specified issue, they never argued that the internet is not a means of facility of interstate commerce. And even here on appeal today, they conceded that issue. They were not precluded from arguing that in that motion. They were not precluded from later arguing at trial that the appellant used the internet.
I mean, isn't the question as to whether means or facility of interstate commerce does or does not include the internet, isn't that a matter of statutory interpretation for the court to make?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
So you disagree with?
I'm sorry. But the question whether a computer was actually used in this case was an element that had to be proven. Do you understand the distinction?
Yes. Exactly right. Whether or not in this case, not to mish words, but I do think that an internet could be used without, or the computer could be used without actually being attached to the internet. So, the fact that the internet was used in this case was the element. So, I think to answer your question, the government merely needed to prove that the internet was used, and as a matter of statutory interpretation, whether the internet is a means or facility of interstate commerce is in the province of the judge.
Okay, then back to statutory construction. Do you have any response to the appellants pointing out the fact that the word computer is in other subsections of the statute and isn't there? Doesn't Congress usually do these things for a reason?
Yes, Your Honor. And the response is simple. Under 2422, Congress is using modifiers. So if you look at United States v. Lewis, Lewis talks about the modifiers that Congress uses when it intends to exercise its power under commerce. And so in this particular case, Congress is exercising its broadest power. So it need not list every possible thing that could fall within
that. Well, what constitutional basis was there for 2422A other than the commerce power?
I can't answer that.
And yet they saw fit to put computer in there. And I think I would submit that they're probably exercising the same power, constitutional power in both, the commerce power. And you're saying, well, they're exercising commerce power and it's very broad, so they don't have to say this. That may be true, but then why did they say it in one place and not in another?
The words please excuse me, I thought you said 2422A, not 2252A. 2252A uses the word computer, but if my recollection serves me correctly, it doesn't use the words any means or facility. It is a more narrow...
Okay, it's a computer-specific statute. Okay.
Well, it's a more narrow exercise of the commerce power than 2422.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. What you're saying is it's more narrowly focused statute.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's why they said, because they limited it to use of computer. And it wouldn't cover the use of the mail.
Well, it could cover the use of the mail.
Well, what's the text of the statute?
I don't have that particular statute in front of me, Your Honor. But 2252A requires an actual transmission across state lines. Therefore, it is a narrower statute under the commerce power. 2422 Bravo. It doesn't matter whether transmission was across the street or across state lines. Because they exercised Congress exercised the power explained under Lopez 2, it need not be intrastate activity, but merely intrastate activity. And that's the point that the government is trying to make.
Wait a minute. It need not be inter or intra. I think I misunderstood you.
2422 Bravo need not be interstate. It can be wholly intrastate activity in order to violate the statute.
Okay, what's the constitutional hook then?
It's still the commerce power.
Okay, what?
Lopez, too.
Because it's economic activity?
So you're relying on now Justice Sotomayor's opinion, second opinion, Circuit in Giordano?
Yes, yes, Your Honor.
Now, we don't need to get into all of that to decide this case, do we?
Yeah. No, Your Honor. The only point with regard to that that is important is that it removes any factual issue away from the case. So we need not decide whether there was any transmission in this case across state lines, merely that the internet was used. And so to the extent that the factual determination of whether something crossed state lines would take it out of the province of the judge and put it with the province of the panel is not at play in this case. So at least with respect to 18 U.S.C. 2422, the military judge absolutely can make a decision as a matter of law whether or not something satisfies that jurisdiction.
Is there a case you can point to in the Article III courts where they've held that this is an exclusive decision for the judge and the issue of intranet does not go to the panel or jury?
No, I can't point to a specific case that uses that language, but what we can glean from the federal cases is they repeatedly analyze this type of issue in a way that illustrates where the jurisdictional issue ends and the factual sufficiency of the case begins. In a sense, each and every one of these cases do two things. One, they say, hey, was there any evidence of what the internet is on the record by the witnesses? Or, hey, what have other cases done with regard to what the internet is? And so this court, like the other Article III courts, can look to both what was on the record to determine what the nature of the internet is, to determine whether or not it's a facility of interstate commerce, and also to other cases, those other federal circuits and the Supreme Court, which have defined pretty explicitly what the internet is, to determine that it is a facility or means of interstate commerce. I see that my time has expired. May I briefly conclude? This court should reverse the Army Court and find that the military judge properly instructed the panel by using the term internet, or alternatively, that the failure to instruct using the terms any facility or means of interstate commerce in her instruction was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. Alternatively, this court could affirm the Army Court with respect to either the Clause 1 or Clause 2 offense. Therefore, the United States asks that this court affirm the findings and sentence.
Is there a rebuttal?
First, addressing the government's argument as it applies to Nieder, the defense would argue the government is implying appellant had a burden at the trial court and is reading something into Nieder that simply is not there. Under Nieder, one must show that the element was contested, and how it is contested is not specifically set forth in Nieder, but implying the defendant has to put on evidence at trial is putting a burden on the defense that you simply cannot do. The Clause 2 element in this case was clearly contested by the defense throughout the entire trial. Several witnesses were cross-examined on the Clause 2 element of the offense. Special Agent Lepofsky was cross-examined, and it was established that she was, in fact, 27 years old. The chats were private. There was no intent, or they were cross-examining based on no intent to engage in the act. And then during the closing argument, the defense counsel argued that that specific element was not met because every time the Army was brought up, it was based on the questioning of the special agent versus appellant. Therefore, the issue was contested throughout the trial.
Counsel, let's assume that you're correct on that, and that also the relationships between clauses 1 and 2 are so close that it would be prejudicial as to both, just assume. Let's also assume that Clause 3, the charge under Clause 3 is valid, not asking to concede that. Why would there be any reason for this court to not simply approve the Clause 3 offense under those circumstances? That is, did the Clause 1 and 2 in any way prejudice the Clause 3 determination?
I don't think we can tell, Your Honor, as far as how the specification was charged and then compounding that with the instructions by the military judge, I don't think you can say there wasn't prejudice just because we're not sure on what theory the panel did affirm in this case.
But doesn't, in a way, your winning argument on one and two cause a problem for you on three, and that is, to the extent that the military judge focused them on clause three, again, not asking you to concede that three is valid, but if it is valid, why does that not diminish any harm from the clause one and two convictions, given the failure to instruct and focus?
I guess in this case, Your Honor, the military judge did not instruct on any element of the offense. Thus, we can't, I'm not sure I understand the question.
Didn't the military judge instruct on clause three?
It's our contention she did not instruct
right,
on
but,
clause
but
three.
But the predicate for his question, which he's not asking you to concede, but is the predicate is that the clause three charge was valid. So assuming that it was valid, without conceding it,
Yes, Your Honor. Then yes, the clause one and clause two would not matter in this case because you need only convict on one of the alternate theories.
So you need to win on all three at this point.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Which appellant believes we do win on all three based on the fact that for clause one and two, one specifically, there was absolutely no evidence set forth, nor was it argued as a theory. Clause two, was contested throughout the trial, and additionally, there was no overwhelming evidence. And clause three, the specific element was not instructed upon by the military judge. In fact, she made her own determination, withholding it from the panel, and thus no evidence was presented by the government that the internet was a means or facility of interstate commerce. Based on the instructional error of the judge and the fact that we cannot say it was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, we'd ask this court to dismiss the charge and specification. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. The case has now been submitted, and the court will stand in recess until quarter past, and thank you for your arguments.
The court stands in recess until